Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor Kesem and Diana Kelly. We live in a cyberspace almost all the time, but do we know enough about living in it securely? Join this dynamic duo as they take you through an exploration of daily cyber activities and how you can make better choices to make them secure for yourself and your family. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome to Your Everyday Cyber. I'm Limor Kesem, a cybersecurity professional and advisor. My co-host is Diana Kelly, a cybersecurity expert who is the CTO and co-founder of Security Curve. And the internet that started out somewhere in 1969 has, over the past 50 years or so, evolved into a means of communications that is inherent to our society, to our daily lives, and it also underpins critical functions of a lot of what keeps our economy going. We keep learning about that every day more and more, and it has come to have a very wide influence on everything in our daily lives. And I know, and you know, there are aspects of the internet we know very well. We know how to use it. We know how to leverage it. We do a lot of stuff there. But it seems to me that are some moving parts that are just continually evolving in very elusive ways, and they're just becoming harder to understand over time. And what I'm talking about is how the internet allows service providers to track us, target us with ads, monetize our activity, and even predict what we might want to buy or need so that more products can be offered to us. And a lot of that tracking is facilitated by something known as cookies. And what's inside those sweetly named files can change wildly depending on their creator's intent.
I know, it sounds so yummy, right? And bear want a cookie, but yeah, it really can impact our privacy and personal information in a variety of ways. Since cookies are essentially just small files that websites send to our browsers to track us, you know, they can, as you mentioned, be used very differently. And it sounds a little bit creepy when you say tracking, but some of what cookies are doing for us are creating session state or persistence. In other words, they're able to remember things as we move about a site. So if you think about going shopping online, when you go from different pages in that site and you're looking for one thing then another and you're filling your shopping cart, you want that website to remember what's in your shopping cart, and a cookie can help do that. But it can also be, and that's something we all want, but you know, it can also be a little bit weird. Like if you have been shopping and suddenly go away from that site and you're maybe at it, checking the news on another site, and suddenly you see an ad for the same luggage you were just shopping for before, that can feel like, you know, and it can feel a little bit creepy. And that's when things like third-party cookies are involved.
Yeah. And you know what? We kind of got used to it. In some cases, like, yeah, I want to see some ads to this thing right now. You know, we kind of got used to it. And we even sometimes we even like it. But, you know, Diana, cookies are coming under a lot more scrutiny nowadays because many regulators and legislators have understood that our basic rights are in some cases being abused by what's inside those digital cookies. And almost every website you visit nowadays, you will get a list of cookies that have to approve or reject. You know, sometimes we don't have the time, we just got to approve, but there's stuff there. Yeah. Because companies are obliged to provide details about what is in there. What are they tracking? What do they do with our data? And this is where it actually gets even murkier, because there are techniques that can bypass that straightforward permission. And some marketers use them to get more details about us without our consent. And to help us understand more about this, we have invited the data diva, Debbie Reynolds, to join us today. Debbie is a data privacy and data protection expert. Debbie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That was a great explanation of cookies.
Yeah, so cookies, you know, it's such an innocuous name for something that's becoming increasingly problematic. And I was wondering, how are cookies used in what's known as fingerprinting? And why should our listeners know about this?
Okay, good. Fingerprinting is somewhat complex. So fingerprinting is the capability of a marketer or someone on the internet to be able to gather enough information about you to know exactly who you are. And they use that, it can be used for good or bad, right? So it can be used to target you, to market, retarget you, to market things to you that maybe you would never have even thought about. And then the other, the flip side of that is that companies like data brokers use that information to put into risk models and to sell to other companies like insurance companies or health companies, because a lot of those companies are trying to reduce their risk. So there may be something that you search for on your computer, and if they're fingerprinting you, they may say, let's say you search for cancer or something on the internet. They may infer that you have cancer or something like that. And then if they sell that information to, for example, an insurance company, an insurance company may deny you without ever telling you that they found that information out from a marketer.
Yikes. All right. That's pretty worrisome. You know, something else that I read about that was worrisome is that even when the marketers don't know who I am, they may have a way of figuring out or being able to predict what I might buy online and then target ads at me that way. So how can a marketer figure out what I might be going to buy just by watching my normal browsing?
Most of the time they're looking at what you've done in the past, and then they're trying to make assumptions about what you're going to do in the future. So let's say you look for prom dresses or something like that on the internet. I'm too old for that, but they may say, well, you know, she looked for prom dresses here. Let's give her other types of dresses, you know, so maybe not even prom dresses. So they're like, okay, this person likes dresses. You know, I have a marketer that wants to sell different types of dresses, and then I'm going to like send them that. So they try to infer a lot based on what you've done in the past, and then they kind of throw things at you to see if those are things that will be of interest.
They like throw it at the wall and see if it's going to stick. So, right. You know, this is, yeah, they try to see what you'd probably like. And, you know, I heard lately about something different. It was this debacle between Apple and apps on their app store. Mm-hmm. They're saying that some companies use a lot of our personal data to benefit their advertisers, but now they're going to limit that ability. So I'm wondering if that's a good thing that's happening for us as consumers.
Yes, partially. So Apple, has been talking for about a year about, these restrictions that they're going to put on third parties in terms of how they, collect data about individuals that use Apple products. And so recently they released, it's iOS 14.5. So basically all of iOS 14 has had some privacy features, but 14.5 is kind of the really heavy one, where they implemented this thing called App Tracking Transparency, or ATT. So ATT is a way that Apple has put together to let apps or companies that have third-party data collection. It basically says, you know, we're not going to let you get granular information about individuals without their consent. So basically, they're putting up a roadblock to marketers that they have never had before. So before, Apple had this thing called the Apple ID for advertising, and the ID for advertising could identify you and your device specifically. So targeters, so for example, let's say you downloaded an app on Apple. On app device, and if you said, you know, once you downloaded it, that person will get your actual ID, and they will know like your name or maybe your email address, and then they could also tell what other things are on your phone and how much you've spent overall in the app store for any purchase that you ever made. So a lot of it was them being able to try to see, okay, this person spends a lot of money on X, you know, let's market them for this or that. And then also marketers were taking this information back and creating profiles again on people that they were reselling to other people. So basically Apple said, we're not going to let you do that on our service. So they are rejecting any apps that are asking for information that's not directly related to their app. And then if and they're not by default giving marketers that more detailed ID information about an individual, they're giving them more general statistics about their marketing campaign. And then if the marketer wants more detailed information about the individual, they have to request it from you, and they have to be transparent with you about what they're planning to do with the data.
Well, that sounds like a step in the right privacy direction, at least. We understand that there's more than one type of cookie. Is that right? There's something called, yes, a persistent cookie and then regular cookies. What are the differences between them and what are their implications for personal data and privacy?
Yeah, there are lots of different types of cookies, but the ones you talk about are, what's the word I'm looking for? So think of cookies as a box, right? You can put almost anything in a box. So before cookies, their original intent was to help save settings for individuals when they visit websites. So let's say, for example, you want to, a particular website you go to, you want to view it in dark mode or something. That's just an example. They would place a cookie on your device, say, every time this person goes to this page, make sure it's in dark mode. So that's a very innocent way to use a cookie. So that type of cookie can be, you know, they will want that to be persistent because they want you to come back to that site and they want to be able to remember that setting. So the flip side of that, let's say there's a third party marketer that you've never heard of. And you say you visit a site, and then in addition to the site cookies about kind of how you like to view their site, they throw another cookie in there from a marketer that you've never heard about. And that marketer may be using the cookie to tell what other types of sites that you visit so that they can retarget you for ads. So the persistent cookie really is just something that will just stay on your device, right? It doesn't change a lot. A lot of those are based on kind of settings. And then, of course, if people have bad intent, they want to track you almost everywhere you go on the internet.
That is crazy. And, you know, there are things like that. And then other things that bug me even more is the tracking that takes place without my knowledge or consent. There are certain companies that do it. It's one example is unfortunately Facebook again. Say I don't use their app on my phone. I don't use, you know, other applications like from WhatsApp and Instagram. I don't use any of that. But even though I don't, they plant cookies on other applications and on browsers. They still track me to then advertise to me in different ways. So, or to collect information. Then I log into my account, say somewhere else. Maybe I do log into Facebook and I see all these bunch of ads because they've been following me all day. How can I protect myself from this type of tracking? Is there something I can block them?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. It's almost impossible to stop some of this stuff, especially because Facebook and other companies have been very, what's the word I'm looking for? They've been very productive in being able to get their information into other apps. So one thing that some, let's say application makers, for example, they may go on to coding sites like GitHub or not GitHub. I think GitHub, where they pull code down. And so what a lot of these companies are doing, they're throwing their code into those stores. So that when people develop apps, they may have just natively trackers in it. unless they take them out. So it's almost impossible to do it, I think, especially because some of it they try to get you to consent to, as others they don't have to. So some of it is like, let's say, you know, how you go to a website and says sign in with Google or sign in with Facebook or whatever. You think, oh, this is easy. I don't have to create a new username or password. But what you're doing is agreeing to tracking and agreeing to data sharing between those companies. So that's one thing I recommend people don't do. Mm-hmm. So create a unique username and password for things and don't sign in with these other apps, because what they're doing is sharing information about you and you're consenting to that. I think for apps, I would say, you know, and I'm guilty of this too. It's like you download an app and then you use it for 10 minutes and never do anything with it again. If there are apps on your phone that you don't need or don't use, you should definitely like delete those, because some of those can be some of the bigger trackers that you wouldn't even think about. So like, and that's something that Apple is trying to stop now in their app store going forward. So they're not going to go back and make those changes. So let's say you have something like a flashlight app or something, and that flashlight app may be tracking your location, and you're thinking, why does a flashlight app need to track my location? But that code is in that app and is doing all types of things that you may not know about. So I would say only put the apps on your phone that you really need and want, and sort of reassess periodically, you know, maybe once a year or so. You know, what am I not using? What do I not want? Because it's definitely a trade-off, right? So the issue is, especially with free apps, is that the sky is the limit in terms of what they think they can get from you. So, you know, in exchange for a free app, they can do almost anything. They can ask for almost anything. So that's one reason why certain apps are free, because they don't, you know, if let's say they weren't free, they would have to limit what they could possibly do, because you could say, you know, I pay $50 a month for this, and then they're like, well, we want to know everything about you, and you're like, well, that doesn't seem like an even bargain.
It's true. So here's one that I've been hearing from a lot more people, is this feeling that if you just even talk near your phone, that somehow, you know, suddenly it knows things about you. So you may be out to lunch talking to a friend with your phone next to you on the table saying, I would love to go to Thailand. Someday I'd like to take a vacation in Thailand. And then suddenly they start getting ads for trips to Thailand. Are people just noticing this? Is that really possible? Can that really be happening? And if so, how?
That's all true. So your phone is almost always listening. Pretty much always listening, listening to you. So it's not a coincidence that you were talking about, you know, going to Thailand and then you get an ad for that, because they are listening. I had a situation where I was talking to my brother. He was in my kitchen, and he was saying something about the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the U.S. and he couldn't remember the name of who was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at that time. And his phone literally started talking and said, you know, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is XYZ. And I thought that was extremely creepy. And I've had friends tell me, even recently, they're like, I was talking about this particular restaurant and this particular thing that I wanted to have. And literally, like, that exact thing came up on his phone. It's like, it's just no way that a marketer would have known that other than to listen to my conversation. So yes, there is listening, and they are targeting people based on that. So that's, you know, a lot of the privacy laws and regulations that they're coming out with now are trying to create more transparency in how ads are being served to people and sort of what criteria they have to be able to retarget folks. And then also creating a situation where people can consent or withdraw their consent, and that they create, you know, a level of transparency about what they're doing. Because right now we don't have that.
I know. That's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask if the regulators are actually paying attention to all this craziness that's happening with our privacy. So, you know, from your answer, I'm guessing, yes, they're already taking notice and are probably making efforts, you know, to make cookies less invasive Would you say that they're becoming less invasive maybe after some more, let's say, with the California Privacy Act, for example? Do you think those things are helping?
I think it's helping to bring more awareness. And obviously, when we go to websites, every one of them are different. The way that they try to serve up cookies or the way they try to get consent, a lot of them, some of them I see they have like three or four different buttons, and most people aren't going to read through that. They're just going to pick, So, for example, let's say the consent to all cookies is the biggest button. Most people psychologically are going to click that button, so they know, it's a little bit of trickery going on there with that.
Sure.
But also, I think one of the things I've been most concerned with regulators talking about cookies is that there are many other ways that marketers can gather information about people that aren't cookies. So if you're just focusing on cookies, you're really not paying attention to what's happening. So some of these other ways, you can't consent. You can't stop, them from being able to put stuff on your computer. So one of them is called like a beacon. So beacons can be used in a lot of different ways, like on your cell phone, on websites, and basically it's looking for you to take a particular action or not so that they can record what that information is. So beacons are way worse than cookies, but most regulators have just last on a cookie. So for what I like to see the regulators, instead of try to talk about a particular feature of technology, I like them to talk more about the harm that can happen. So if they're focused on the harm, then it doesn't matter what the technology is. So as a result of cookies, now so much regulation about it, companies like Google are trying to get away, go away from cookies, but they're not stopping their tracking. They're just doing it in a different way.
That's a
Makes
rose by any
sense.
other name, right?
Right. Exactly. So it's like it's so much, and I always, when I heard people talking, oh, we just cookie this, cookie that, and I thought, you guys are gonna box yourselves in by constantly talking about cookies, because there are so many other ways that companies track you that have nothing to do with cookies. They don't necessarily have to put anything on your computer to be able to do this tracking.
That is so interesting, and I agree. I mean, if you block one way, they're going to go for a different way. And I think that the conclusion is really for us to keep our eyes open, keep getting updated on stuff. And so I thank you so much, Debbie, for joining us today and make sense of all this stuff and tell us what's happening out there that we should be aware of. I definitely could use a little more privacy in my cookie recipe, that's for sure. And thank you, our audience, for being with us today. Please continue to follow the podcast and get involved. You can reach out to us on Twitter at cyber underscore every day. We're all on LinkedIn. Debbie's on LinkedIn. If you want to send questions, if you want to get involved in data privacy or suggest topics for upcoming episodes, you can also email us at youreverydaycyber@securitycurve.com. And if you'd like to see resources from our podcast today, we have resources on our page from each episode, including information about cookies and how to claim back some of your privacy. So thank you everyone for tuning in, and stay safe out there.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor and Diana. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.